श्रीशुक उवाच एवं अभ्यर्थितो विष्णुर् भगवान् शूलपाणिना रहस्य भाव गंभीरम् गिरीशं प्रत्यभाषत। श्रीशुक उवाच एवं अभ्यर्थितो विष्णुर् भगवान् शूलपाणिना रहस्य भाव गंभीरम् गिरीशं प्रत्यभाषत। श्रीशुक उवाच एवं अभ्यर्थितो विष्णुर् भगवान् शूलपाणिना रहस्य भाव गंभीरम् गिरीशं प्रत्यभाषत।
Translation. My Lord, we have come here desiring to see that form of your Lordship which you showed to the demons to captivate them completely, and in this way enable the demigods to drink nectar. I am very eager to see that form. Shukadev Goswami said, when Lord Vishnu was thus requested by Lord Shiva, who carries a trident in his hand, he smiled with gravity and replied to Lord Shiva as follows. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is known as Yogeshwara, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna. Mystic yogis want to acquire some power by practicing the yoga system. But Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is known as the Supreme Lord of all mystic power. Lord Shiva wanted to see the Mohini Murti, which was captivating the entire world. And Lord Vishnu was gravely thinking of how to captivate Lord Shiva also. Therefore, the word bhavagambhiram is used here. The illusory material energy is represented by Durga Devi, who is the wife of Girisha, or Lord Shiva. Durga Devi could not captivate Lord Shiva's mind, but now that Lord Shiva wanted to see Lord Vishnu's feminine form, Lord Vishnu, by his mystic power, would assume a form that would captivate even Lord Shiva. Therefore, Lord Vishnu was grave and at the same time was smiling. So Lord Shiva, he is in this universe the greatest devotee. He is senior to all in this universe, even to Lord Brahma and all the great sages. So he is considered the foremost. So he is, always meditating on the Lord, always thinking of the Lord, and always absorbed in the Lord's pastimes and purposes. So then, here we see he was very interested to see, what is this form that the Lord had performed, had manifested. So it would be a very natural. He is servant, but at the same time they're almost like friends. It's a very, very unique relationship. She was very different from all the other tattvas, so it would be very similar, like Balaram is. But in this case, then Balaram is his older brother. Well, here Shiva will, it's not exactly, because sometimes he's older, sometimes he's younger, like that. So the Vishnu Tattva is the Supreme Lord, is the enjoyer, the Purusha. And the Jiva is the servant. The mood of the Jiva is always that of servant. The Shiva, his mood is he is both servant and Purusha. He is actually Purusha. He is enjoyer. He is male. All the Vishnu Tattva are male. All the Shakti Tattva, Jiva Tattva, they're all female in their mood. So, but Shiva is both. He is the Lord, but he is servant. Vishnu is also in the mood of service, like Balaram. But he's the Supreme Lord who is serving. Like that. So it's a little different. That Balaram, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he's in the mood of service to Krishna. But Shiva, he is a devotee. He is fully manifesting as a devotee, doing sadhana as a devotee, meditation as a devotee. Well, we don't find Vishnu doing this. In his mind, he'll contemplate and think about Krishna and Krishna's pastimes and all these things. But he manifests as the Supreme Lord. But Shiva manifests as a devotee. But though he is Purusha, he is also a male. Because the external energy, which is the reflection of the internal potency, then is his consort. And he is not bewildered by her, attracted by her. It means she is his consort. He takes care, he does everything perfectly, but she cannot bewilder him by her potencies, because he is more powerful. Because Prakriti comes from Purusha. So therefore, Purusha can't be bewildered by Prakriti. So therefore, he is thinking, I'd like to see this, you know. His wife, she is the, you know, the complete form of the material energy. And so she is very attractive. She has a very perfect form, you know, that is the manifestation of the material energy. And, you know, he has seen also Lakshmi. And so he's just wondering now, this is all Shakti, internal Shakti and external Shakti. But Krishna, he is the Supreme Lord. What would he look like if he was taking the form of a woman? So Shiva was very intrigued by this. So we see before, he's under no illusion, or he's not trying to do anything. He has offered so many wonderful prayers. And so then, but, you know, being Purusha also, he was interested, you know, how did he, kind of like, you know, what did you do? You did this, you went and you did this very interesting activity. You know, how did you do it? What was, you know, just what was your mood? What was happening? Kind of from the inside. So he was thinking, you know, how to see this. So we see here is because of that mood, then he is completely submissive and he is Lord. So then Vishnu wants to reciprocate with him because he is very dear to Vishnu. So he is both very grave and at the same time he's smiling because he wants to figure out how to bewilder him. So he's thinking about what would attract Shiva, what would bewilder him. Because Shiva's coming from him. He knows his potency. And so he knows that Shiva's not attracted by the external potency. And he's very reverential towards the internal potency. So he's not attracted there. But he is Purusha. So he is thinking how to manifest the form in such a way that even he becomes attracted, so he becomes bewildered. So this is a very, you know, he's thinking like this, so therefore he's great. The same time is because that is his purpose, so it's kind of like some fun, kind of like a joke on Shiva. Therefore he is simultaneously smiling. So here then also Prabhupada points out is that the mystic yogis, they want to acquire some power. They can change shape, they can control people, they can do so many things. Their idea is to control. By that controlling, they will enjoy. But they are not controllers, they're not enjoyers. So it's a false platform. But the Supreme Lord, for him, all this mystic power is natural for him. It's normal for him. It's not it means all potencies, all activities are all coming from him. So he is mystic potency. Like this, the yogis are getting a very small part of his mystic potency. So there's no amazement that the Lord could do this. But now his mystic potency is beyond everybody. Even Balaram can't understand Krishna's mystic potency. So if Balaram can't understand, means no one can understand. Like that. Because he is the same as Krishna. He is full manifestation of the personality of Godhead. But because he's expanded, therefore he's in the mood of servant, naturally. Because wherever is your source, there's a mood of service towards that source. But he has all the qualities and everything of Krishna. But still, because Krishna is his source, therefore there's going to be something that Krishna can perform that Balaram may not understand. He's not bewildered by it, but he cannot understand. So in that way it's a bewilderment. It's not like our ignorance. It means he knows as Krishna and knows everything, just like we see in the pastime after Agasura, the cows and calves, in the Brahma Vimohan Lila, that Krishna, he took that form, and then Balaram is watching all this, and then he is saying, no, people, they only deal like this with Krishna. So there's something's going on here. So he came to Krishna to ask. You know, he has a doubt, you know, by his potency, then he can understand, but not fully, unless Krishna wants. So generally we see with Balaram, whatever he does, then Balaram, you know, is part of it. He's understanding like that. Like with Kaliya's serpent, with that pastime, then he was caught up in his coils, Kaliya's coils. Everybody was lamenting, but Balaram wasn't, because he knows he's the Supreme Lord. There's no question that this Kali is going to give him any problem. It's just his pastime. So he was fully cognizant of what was going on, fully aware. But when Krishna wants, then even Balaram doesn't understand. You know, so like when he leaves and goes out with the cowherd girls to Radhakund in the middle of the day, then Balaram's absorbed in his pastimes with the other boys. He doesn't notice. And like this, so many times, a few times, then even Balaram wasn't aware of what was going on. So here, then he is thinking, then as Shiva, what would attract Shiva like that? And so, because he is in the Purusha mood, therefore he could catch his attention that he wants to enjoy like that. Though as servant, then he naturally wouldn't. Anything that's in his creation, he wouldn't. But because Krishna is the potency of attraction, therefore he will now design a manifestation that will specifically be able to attract Lord Shiva. Any questions on this? Or
mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't imply that it will not be the same form that was manifested between the time of
It will be this means I'd say physically it would look the same, but you see the important element is what you put into it that makes it attractive. Just take the form of a woman on her own, it's not actually attractive, it is neutral. But depending upon their mood that they put into it and how they do it, that makes it attractive for a particular person or persons. So therefore, the form will be the same, but just exactly how he's going to act that will create that attraction for Shiva, that's the main thing. It's the potency, it's not the form. You know, that is the... Like, we're attracted in this world to the form of woman, toward all so many forms of beauty. But it's actually how Krishna has put the potency into it. Like that. So it's not actually the form of it. But in Krishna's case, because it is real, therefore the form is attractive. But at the same time as now to make it specifically designed. So the demons, it doesn't take much. It just has to smile a little bit, move a little this way and that way, so that they feel that you know, he's, you know, I mean, that Mohini is very, very, you know, interested in their well-being. You know, that she's going to be with them in just a moment. Just she has these other duties she has to take care of, but actually she would rather be with the demons. So she just has to project that mood, and it won't take much of the feminine nature to attract the demons like that. You know, just a touch is enough. Like that. Those who are very desirous of the feminine form, then it doesn't take much to attract them. But while Shiva, he is not, he is in control of, you know, his senses. He is Lord, he is Purusha. So he's not, but at the same time is the greatest devotee. He's not attracted by the material energy. You know, he basically dutifully takes care of her, you know, in a very caring, you know, very loving way, but he's not controlled by her. So just for fun, because everybody else in the material world is controlled. You know, so he's watching this and he's completely above this. So it will never have been in his experience to have been controlled by the form of a woman. So this will be the fun that Krishna is going to manifest. It's just how to do it so that that Lord Shiva becomes completely bewildered. Does that make any sense?
But I would have thought that if once he wanted to see that particular form, then it should have been only that form and not a tendency to cheat him progressively.
No, but it's not a cheating. It's just like this. You have one woman and she's standing in one place, and there are three men in the room. There's her father, there's her husband, there's her son. That same woman, whoever she looks at, they're going to see a different manifestation of her potency. They're not going to see the same woman. The form is the same. So there's no cheating on that part. What the son sees, the father sees, and the husband sees are the same. But the mood manifested just in the eye and the glance and the smile and the movement is totally different. So it's just a matter of the feminine means that there's so much variety of potency. So which one is manifested for who, that is the expertise of the individual. So here, he is manifesting the same exact form. So if you had a picture of Mohini Murti in front of the demons and one in front of Shiva, you would look at it, you see exactly the same. But it's just the way the glance, the mood, the movements, those will be different. So that's what makes the difference. Because for women, these things are subtle. They don't have to be gross. Nowadays, they like to manifest in a very gross way, because people being very ignorant, otherwise they may not notice like that. But in the Vedic, very subtle is enough. Just a glance, a movement, a slight smile. Just a slight is enough. So here, he'll just manifest his mood in such a way. Form will be the same, it's just the mood will be a little different. Like that. Because the demons wouldn't have been able to handle the other. They would have just probably melted down into little puddles on the ground. And, but Shiva being very powerful, then. Is that okay? So he's not cheating them.
Well, he wanted to have a bit of fun.
Yeah, he's having, of course. I mean, what do you do with your friends? You have some fun. So, because Sada Shiva and Vishnu are actually the same person, but the mood is different. Mahavishnu, that's why Advaita Acharya is known as Mahavishnu and known as Sada Shiva, because it's the same. And then sometimes it's also explained that he's the combination of both. Because means Vishnu, he's the controller, he's the maintainer, the creator, and the destroyer. So that is a different mood than Krishna in Vaikuntha. That's why they're separately described. Balaram, then he describing Balaram, you've described Vishnu. Because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord of all potencies and everything. That is the mood. But there's no creation and no destruction, because the spiritual world is eternal. But in the material world, you have, because of external potency, you have the manifestations of creation and dissolution. Though the energy is eternal, its manifestation is not. So that creates a different mood that's not in Vishnu. So Mahavishnu then has these three moods. Therefore the Purusha avatars are listed separately when you want to describe the manifestations of the Lord. Then therefore we see is there's Lord Chaitanya as Swayam Bhagavan. Then you have his expansions in his Vishnu Tattva as Balaram. Then you have the Purusha avatars as Advaita Acharya. Because the three different moods. One is the enjoyer. One is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one is the Lord, but he is Lord of seeing to the material creation. So that the moods are different, though it's the same person. So within this Karana Daksha Vishnu, within Mahavishnu, then he has these three moods. Maintaining the material world, which is exactly the same as Vishnu and Vaikuntha. But then there's the creation of the material energy and the dissolution of the material energy. So those are different. So the creation, that mood is called Hiranyagarbha. And that's what manifests in this world as Brahma. And disillusion, then that is Sadashiva, which then manifests as as Shambhu in this world. So therefore, they're the same person, just different mood. And because of that different mood, then he naturally manifests a form that fits that mood. Just like when Krishna is angry, he manifests the form of Nrisimhadev. So when he's in the mood of dealing with the material energy, then he's in the mood of Shiva, like that. Therefore, we see Ananta Sesh, because he's holding everything, he's entered into everything. He's known as Tamasi. Tamasi or Tamasa. That's one of his names. And that means is because when Vishnu comes into the material energy, he enters into everything. So because he's inside the material energy, he's called Tamasi. And though he's not influenced by it or controlled by it, but he's there. But because he's dealing with that material energy, he's known as Tamasi. Like this. So these are very subtle points. They're all points of mood. That's why here's here Bhava Gambhiram. Then you understand is that what's happening here is a mood. It's a mood like that. So therefore these things then are important. They're substance. Mood is substance. Right? It's not so much the material energy, it's more the mood that's important. You know, it's just like here. The man is attracted by a woman, but what's he attracted by? He's attracted by her mood. Not as much the form. The form is there. So when you combine the two, then that makes for a complete package. But the idea is it's the mood more than the form. Otherwise, there's so many girls that look very attractive, but why is somebody attracted by one and not another? It's because of the mood. Like that. So therefore, the mood is actually the important thing. And in the relationship in the home, it's not so much the physical that makes for a good relationship in the home. It's more what's the mood between the persons. If that mood is proper, then things work. If it's not, then it doesn't. Therefore, that's actual substance. It's what is the actual mood of the person. You know, as far as what you get here. It means even here it's illusory. You know, but it's the most substantial of what's illusory. But then that next step is that mood towards Krishna. That becomes real. That's not illusory. So Krishna's moods, then they're all real. And so then here he's dealing with Shiva, who is like his friend. Like that. You know, but Shiva's servant friend, but still friend nonetheless. So he can deal with him in a very intimate way. Therefore, he's going to have some fun. And not only that, we see is it's not just that Shiva's there. Okay, that's one bit of fun. But Shiva's there with his wife. So that would be the most fun, right? Because she can't bewilder him like that. But now Vishnu will bewilder. So then even she'll be impressed with the feminine manifestation that Vishnu makes. Even she will be impressed by the potency. So that will be, and plus that's another thing. Plus then in front of your wife, it's one thing if a man is attracted by a woman, you know, if nobody sees, you know, it's there and then it goes away. But if when he looks, his wife notices he looks, then it's a very embarrassing moment. So then from all these different angles, then Krishna's going to have some good fun.
Plus the sages
were
there too.
The sages were also there.
They saw them too.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah, you're still embarrassed. Yes, even more. Even more embarrassment. But it would be tuned to Shiva, so therefore only he'll be attracted. The sages won't be like that. So therefore it'll be... Because when you get up into these very high, pure levels, then... You don't have, you know, all these bad qualities of malice and envy and, you know, the inability to forgive, forget, all these different things. Therefore, it's a very different, you can be very much open there. Like you see with, what's his name? Chitraketu. When Chitraketu was going by in his airplane, and he was going by, and he was a pure devotee. And he was, you know, beyond the attraction of the material energy. But at the same time, it's because he was still, as a king, and still within this world, then he was riding in this airplane full of Vidyadharas, all these beautiful women. And so then he's seeing Shiva then sitting in the assembly of the sages, with his wife sitting right on his lap, you know, in a very intimate way. She's just sitting there. And so then he's laughing at this, is that here's the greatest of devotees sitting in front of the sages with his wife on his lap. And here I am, you know, a pure devotee, and I'm riding around with all these beautiful women. So he's just joking on how interesting it is that such things can go on, but at the same time they're not at all a disturbance amongst those who are honest. So that was his kind of point, intimacy of this. So as pure devotees, then they are comparable. You know, as position within the universal hierarchy, of course Shiva is great and Chitraketu is a human king. But at the same time as on the platform of liberation, then there's a great, friendship or interaction that is there. You know, because amongst devotees, they don't really make distinction between what potency they are. Like the internal potency does not make distinction that their internal potency and the jivas are marginal. Like that. So they're friends. There's not a problem. Or Balaram and his manifestations, you know, that are Vishnu type, they're friends like that. So they don't make those distinctions because the common platform is the devotees. So then these things, these pastimes could go on, they could have this interaction. And it's pleasant, it's nice, it's open. Like that. But when we come down to this platform, then there's always the problem of the prestige and everything. Here it's more real. Well, there it's not. They understand the positions, they understand all the different difficulties. Like Dhritarashtra, throughout the Mahabharata, is always referred to as royal sage. Because he is greatly learned in the scriptures. He does everything by religious principles. He just has this weakness of attachment for his son. So that one weakness, one will not write off everything else that is good. So that's the difference. And they, you know, like in the contemporary situation, if there's one fault, it's useless. But in the Vedic, you would see as useful how much is useful. And what is useless, you'll take that, you know, as useless only. So then you will see both. So here then, you know, the sages, they will see this, his wife will see this, but everybody will understand. It's the Supreme Lord. He wants to bewilder somebody, then no one's going to be able to resist. It means everybody's and even Shiva's already said, we're all bewildered. We don't know you. You know, we know this creation, Brahma and Shiva. Shiva, he's the top. He knows everything of this creation, but still he doesn't really understand because it's Vishnu's potency that makes it work. Like that. His wife, he understands, but his wife is not what really is what's bewildering the living entities. His wife carries Vishnu's potencies. Through his wife, Vishnu bewilders the living entities. So therefore he really doesn't understand. Like that. That's okay. Does that make some sense? Yes.
How can we, as devotees in the material world, deal with the potencies that they are, as you were saying, they're not discriminated here and they come across how do we deal with them?
We need to see. Main thing is to try to have a more clear picture, a complete picture, because then you see what is good in somebody and what is weak in somebody. And what is good, then that should be accepted, and what is weak, then that should be avoided. Like that. That's the main thing. It means it's understood if one is in the material world, unless one is in incarnation. Then there's going to be some weakness. It's just the way it is. And if that's accepted, then it's not a problem. See, in the Vedic culture, it's not really a problem. And also, I'm not sure of others, but I mean, in the Western religions and the Judaic culture, it's not a problem either. But in the and the Catholic, I can't. Can accommodate a little bit problems, but the Protestant can't accommodate problem at all. It's against their religion. That's why they manifested, because of problems in the Catholic Church. But if you look, and is in the Old Testament, is that every senior personality there has a problem. I don't think there's one person there who's squeaky clean. You know? Everybody does something wrong. You know, Moses had a lack of faith at one point in one incident for one moment like that. And everybody else, something was wrong. Somebody got drunk, somebody did this, somebody made off with someone else's wife like this. So it's understood everybody can have problems. It's just the way it is like that. But then it's become changed in Catholicism. They established their own scripture, and then based on the writings of the authorities at the time, and so it took it away from that. So basically, you just would look at Jesus, who then he is a preacher. He's come, and basically, you don't see any problems there. Because the class of people he's dealing with wouldn't be able to accommodate. And then you take from there, they take it to another point, and they only talk about purity, like Mary. They talk about Mary. Now you would naturally think of, as a mother of Jesus, that you would think of the kindness and all those motherly qualities. But she's only projected as immaculate. Pure, that's all. The guy, it's like kind of like Mother Jesus. She's immaculate. No flies on Mary. It's they're so much worried about the purity that they pull back from actually the person. So then that has influenced very much the contemporary culture. Because in that, then you're they give you the benefit of the doubt, until you're, innocent until proven guilty. But if they find one point that you're guilty on, that's it, you're finished. There's no, it's 100% or zero, there's nothing in between. So this weakness in the culture then creates this social phenomena where there's total intolerance of anybody's bad qualities. So it's a conditioning. But in the Vedic culture, that's not the approach. It's understood everything has its weakness. Man is strong in certain ways, weak in another. Woman in some ways, weak in another. A leader is strong in some ways, weak in another. A servant is strong in some ways, weak in another. Like a servant, they're loyal, they're honest, they work for the benefit of who they're working for, then they're considered a good servant. They don't look at other qualities. They don't look at, his attachments, his lack of sadhana. Those aren't looked at, because those are understood. That's just the way it is. Like a dog. You look at a dog as nice, he does his duties, he's loyal, he keeps everybody out. No one looks, he's got fleas, he's stinky, he's just a dog, Like that. You just understand that that's the way they are. So that's accepted. That's acknowledged. Then you look at what's good. And then if they don't do that, that's bad. The dog's not loyal. The dog doesn't keep anything out. It lets everything in and has a good time with them. There's 50 dogs in your yard because it likes them. Then you'll say it's a bad dog. Like that. But their dogness, that is understood. So in the same way, in the Vedic culture, then womanliness, manliness, leadership, Brahman, all these different things are understood. They know what they are. And so therefore you can acknowledge them for what they are. So you see what is there and what are the natural weaknesses. And so then if someone has those, then if one is in a position, one tries to help them. And if not, one approaches those who can give some help. Does that make some sense? Rather than criticize, because that's understood. It's like if you cook, it's understood you might get burnt. It's just part of the job. So if somebody gets burnt, you just don't go, he's not a good cook, stupid cook. No, it's just then you try to help. You see the quality of the other. That makes sense? Anything else? Yes.
Is it correct to say that Sada Shiva is one, the Sambhu Shiva is many, expanded in each universe? Or is there a Sada and Sambhu Shiva in each universe? Is that correct?
There'll be both. There'll be. Well, basically, Shambhu basically is with Mahavishnu.
Mm.
So you could say in that way, then there's only one. But within the universe, then Shambhu expands within there. But even Shambhu, he has these two moods. One that is not disturbed by Maya, one that does deal with Maya.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he probably tells that story of when there was a big war with the demons. And then there was, I'm not sure how the details of the backup of the story, but it was that Shiva's son with Parvati would be able to defeat these demons, because that was going to be Kartikeya. So she had been Sati before, and she had left that form because she didn't want to be associated with Daksha. So then she had appeared as Parvati. So then the demigods were waiting for that manifestation. So as soon as she appeared, then he says, "You immediately, your son is going to be." So then she was, you know, a very young girl. And so then she immediately went to Shiva, who was in meditation. And she was there and trying to get his attention and, you know, behaving as attractive as possible. And nothing. He wasn't attracted at all. So she even went to the extent where she even grabbed his genital, and still he wasn't disturbed or attracted. So there is the form within this world where he is unattracted. He's completely absorbed in thinking of Sankarshan. But then there's the mood where he interfaces with her, deals with her. You know, he has children through her like this. So then there's that manifestation also. But the original Sada Shiva, then there would be one who would be with Mahavishnu. He lives there in the Brahman also.
I've heard with the astrological calculation as far as perspective, like husband and wife, that sort of the compatibility is based on Shiva and Parvati's interactions. Is that correct?
Basically, because that's what you have. You're dealing. It would be, but at the same time, it's potencies of. But they originally come from Krishna, so we'll see them more as. You have to see which is applicable. For us, generally we'll think of, you know, the potency is, you know, Radha and Krishna. But at the same time, is because of then thinking one is Radha and Krishna, one brings it down to Shiva's level. Because that's the interaction. Because Radha and Krishna, their dealings are on a totally different level. It's the moods. The manifestations is the moods. It's not so much enjoying. Parvati, she is Purusha Shakti. So she's feminine, but she's in the mood of enjoying, which you don't have in the spiritual world. Means your Kubja, she was also Purusha Shakti. Therefore, she wants to enjoy with Krishna. She wants to enjoy. As a feminine, she wants to enjoy. But she wants to enjoy with Krishna. So she's attracted to Krishna, but that is considered the lowest of the rasas, conjugal rasas. It's very ordinary, nothing special. The queens are completely surrendered to please Krishna as wives. You know, they don't want to, but they expect Krishna as a husband to surrender to them. You know, they're not keeping for themselves, I'll enjoy this much and he'll enjoy that much. No, I completely surrender, but Krishna completely surrenders. Therefore, it's 50-50, like that. So then, but the gopis, then it's complete surrender. They just surrender to Krishna, and there's no obligation from his side to surrender back. So therefore, there's a difference. So here, the thing is one is trying to get the relationships here to the second level. Now the modern thing is they're projecting and publicizing, pushing the first level. Woman, she's an individual, she should enjoy. Like that. But in that, then it works with Parvati because she is the potency of Shiva. And Shiva is your eternal husband, and he is a good husband, so he will always take care of her, no matter how she behaves. But in this world, it doesn't work like that, you know. Here, it's just, we're empowered with certain parts of these potencies. And if you, unless you act properly, it won't work. Shiva will act properly, Parvati will act properly. But here, unless you're trained, how one will act properly. Means Parvati knows she's a woman. But she knows who she is. She is self-realized. Shiva knows who he is as Purusha. He is self-realized. But unless one is self-realized here, how one will know what is a man or what is a woman? And if you don't know, how you'll combine them? Right? Man doesn't know what a man is, how he'll know what a woman is. He doesn't know himself, how he'll know a woman, how he'll know how to deal with a woman. Same with a woman. She doesn't know who she is. And acknowledge that. How she'll know how to, what a man is and how to deal with a man. Therefore you take it to Shiva and Parvati, or back to like that Dwarka, where there's rules and regulations, Krishna and the queens, like this. That's the potency, the line of the potency. So manliness is, you have two souls who are exactly the same. They're both female. But because of their desire, one manifests a male form, and it's invested with male potency. Therefore, like nowadays, it's very hard many times to tell the difference between men and women by how they dress and their haircut and their, you know, ornaments and eye makeup, and they can't tell the difference like that. You know, it's like I was on the plane and I could just see the tops of the heads and a little bit of movement. I was sure that the one on the left was the man and the one on the right was a woman. Then after a while I would doubt it. Then I thought they were both women. But then after a while I saw the one that had the woman's haircut was the man and the one that had the man's haircut was a woman. Like that, you know. So nowadays you can only tell by the mood, really. How they move, what is actually the mood in the movement. Then you can tell the difference. Otherwise you can't really tell the difference. So it's a potency, it's been imbued there, so therefore it's called male, or it's called female. Like that. So one has to know, if one wants to deal in the Grihastha Ashram, one has to know what is those potencies. What are their strengths and weaknesses, and how you combine them? Because they're combined only in certain ways. Like you want to cook, you can put together amazing things. Like a chutney, you'll have sweet, you'll have sour, you'll have salty, and you'll have pungent. But how you put it together, you can only do it in a certain way. Otherwise, it won't be a chutney. It'll be terrible. Right? So that's the science. So you have to know what is sour, what is salty, what is sweet, and what is pungent, and what are their potencies. Then you know. You a lot of sugar will be put. Then if you know those, then you're called a good cook. But if you just say, I just do what I like, and you know why I should be restricted, will their cooking be edible? No. You know, it's a science. So therefore, we can think whatever we like, but the point is this material world has been created by God, and it works according to God's rules, not by our rules. You know, it doesn't matter what we think. I'll put this milk on the fire, I'll go out to the store, I'll come back, it won't be burnt. We can say that all day. We can pass a resolution in Parliament that it shouldn't burn. It'll burn. It's just the way Krishna made it.
Knowledge of this comes through purification, or how to gain this knowledge?
Yeah, purification, association. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Guru Sadhu Shastra, it comes from authority. Mm-hmm. Like that. Once we've heard from authority, then when we practically apply it, then we understand it. Mm-hmm. Then we realize it. But it must be gained by through authority. And to accept authority, there must be some purification. Mm-hmm. And depending upon the degree or level that one wants to deal with this, then one takes it more. Because you can deal on so many levels. If you're interested in sense gratification, that's one level. If you're interested in economic development, that's another level. If you're interested in satisfaction of the mind or the emotions, that's another level. If you're interested in the soul, or going back to Godhead. So there's five levels that you can understand man and woman. So depending upon your purity, you'll be able to appreciate, you know, either the higher or the lower, like that. But generally the lower, then they can't understand very much. So that's why in the Vedic culture they try to establish as much as possible everyone in goodness. And then from there, then they can go out to sense gratification, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, or like this. But the platform is dharma. That's the position where they situate themselves. You know? But even if they can't, still, in artha or kama, they situate themselves but by according to rules and regulations. So there is restriction, there is acceptance of authority, there is like this. So then you gain from there. Does that make any sense? So it's a science. So that's why if it's studied, it works. And one just accepts. It's not a matter of getting upset. It just, the thing just does what it does. You know, it's just like you get any appliance. It can only do so many things. You know, a mix, something you use for grinding things. You know, your mixy there. That it won't vacuum the rug. You know, you can be very upset. Why you're discriminating that it can't vacuum the rug? It can do whatever it likes. Why you say all these things? It's okay, go do it. Go have fun. You know. So therefore, you see, is because of that, then we see weakness in the social fabric, because people don't know who they are, won't accept who they are, won't accept who the other person is. You know. So therefore, how you have community, you know, and so then therefore it's then you can have community. If this is understood.
Until purification or realization knowledge comes, it's a matter we just have to tolerate everybody's idiosyncrasies.
Like that. Mm-hmm. Means anyway, there's going to be individuality. As you it means, like you see, generally when you get. The new devotees, basically they're all very similar. There's not a whole lot of difference, you know. As they get purified and they are performing devotional service for a length of time, then you start to see they each become so individually unique, you know, so different than someone else. So as they're purified, then that individuality will become more, you know, and we'll be able to appreciate it more. That's the whole point of the humility and tolerance and respect and not respecting. If you, that is the key to all social, interactions. You know, from the lowest to the topmost. That mood can take you from you know just being, you know, a member of a street gang up to. You know, Mahabhav. That's the essence. That's the principle of relationships. How you respect somebody, it depends. You know, the father you respect differently than you will the husband or the son or another member, senior member of the family or the president or like this. But respect is there. You know, the manifestation of humility, the manifestation of tolerance, what you're tolerating. You know, for a small baby that they cry, that's tolerated. You know, but for, you know, someone a little bit older, it's not tolerated. They shouldn't behave like that. They're more mature. They shouldn't throw tantrums. You know, baby, anything happens to it, it cries. Everybody understands. Everybody comes to see what's wrong. But if an 8-year-old does the same thing, then they'll say this kid's spoiled. So that's not tolerated. But this other is tolerance. So how to apply those four principles? Then that's the science. But that's the essence of it.
That's it. Maharaj, this responsibility then being to provide the purification for the general community of devotees in order for the community to be
able. Well, it means, how you say, you have a simultaneous thing is that. Is your leadership is what is going to give direction and inspiration. At the same time, if the individual isn't desirous of it, it won't happen. Either Krishna won't manifest it or it's manifested and they won't notice it. You know, everybody else is happy and then one person is saying it's terrible. It's because they can't appreciate it or see it. So the responsibility isn't means the responsibility starts with the individual. The Vedic system is every individual has to understand who they are and understand then their position, and then what are the other positions and what is their relationship with those, because that's the second thing. First is who we are. Second is who everybody else is and what is our relationship with them. Someone who understands that second thing can go to the third level, which is leadership. But if you can't take the responsibility yourself, then it won't make a good leader or a good follower or a good anybody like that. One has to understand like that. So the Vedic then pushes the responsibility of the individual. Therefore, atato brahma jigyasa. Then leadership should inspire that and help develop that. Like that. See, it's simultaneously. You can't point the finger. Like that, it's both have to perform their duties, and it works nicely. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
As you mentioned, that Sadasivi. So that Sadasivi, he's eternally resident in the spiritual realm, thinking of Shankarshan.
No. See, Shankarshan is one thing, and then Sadashi, he lives in the Brahman. He has his manifestation living in the Brahman. Like that. His whole, all his associates, everybody, they live in the Brahman. Like that. Yeah, but at the same time, he has that manifestation as, if you worship him as Sadashi, he is Sadashi. And if you worship Shambhu, then that depends upon how someone approaches you, then that's how you interact. You understand?
Yeah, because in this time, I can't think how Mahimukti approach, which is, he is not Lord Shiva is not thinking of as Sadashi, because actually it's written Sadashi, he's
Yeah, but at the same time, because his mood is different, he's different. Therefore, Balaram, different mood, he's an individual. So each of these moods are individual. They're individual. So therefore, Shiva is an individual. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's an individual. Just like the jivas, they're expansions, they're individual. So that's the whole thing, how it works. Is that his expanse are all individual. But it's all Krishna, it's all his potency. But because their consciousness is separated, so therefore they interact separately. They are conscious of their own field, how big their field is. So depending upon where you're expanded from, your field is bigger or smaller.
I think they
are
still different personalities.
Yeah, they're different personalities. But it's like Radharani is a complete, she's Swarup Shakti. She is Shakti. But then she expands, her shadow is Paravati, is the external potency. You know, then she expands as Lalita and Vishaka. You know, so of all the gopis in the spiritual realm, they'll be the main, Lalita and Vishaka. They'll be the know the most, but they don't know all what Radharani knows because they've expanded from her. So they've expanded, so they're what's left. And then they'll expand again, and then that person's until it gets down to gets right down to the edge where there's just on the edge. There's just a little bit left of this, and then the external energy starts, which is also very vast. And that's the point where we are. Therefore, we're so small. So we're just on that border. Like that. So that's why we all can only understand a little bit. Because we're not so big. You know, material energy is very big. Spiritual energy is very big. But the jivas are small. Because they're on the border. Because if they're big, then they'll be on this side or that side. So if you want the border, it has to be very, very small. Like, no, it's very fortunate. Because sizes does not matter. Size isn't the thing. It's just like a small child. They're not very big, but they get so much affection. You know. So size isn't really so important. You know. It's the interaction. It's the degree of interaction that makes makes for importance. So when the soul is completely dependent upon Krishna and surrendered to Krishna, then that creates a great depth of interaction with the Lord. So then that's what's appreciated. We're fully satisfied, he's fully satisfied. So for him, size is not important. Those things are our considerations, you know, our conditions, because we want to enjoy. So how we'll enjoy? Well, we want enjoy means we want to be God, and enjoyer means God. So therefore, God is all six qualities, opulences. So therefore, we judge our position based on those opulences. How much we have, then we consider we're bigger, because the idea is we should get them all, you know, as God. But unfortunately, you know, we can't. But, you know, they borrow. So therefore, as an opulence is there, then we think we're powerful, or we're beautiful, or we're knowledgeable, or renounced, or wealthy, or like this. Then we'll consider that we're bigger, because we're coming closer to our ideal of being God. But for Krishna, these are just natural potencies. They're not nothing special. Like that. For him, they're just there. What's special for him is interacting with the potencies. That's what's important. Like for a wealthy man, he has so much wealth and so much opulence in his house, but what's important to him is his interaction with his family members. You know, so whether he's on the street, living in the street, you know, in a little piece of plastic on the side of the road, or he's living in a big mansion, the important is the interaction. And the other is just the field in which you interact, that's all. These are just, you know, you have your values, so you want to enjoy in that environment. But the important thing is the interaction when you get down to it. You know, we said money is the real thing. You know, some say love is important, some say money is important. You know, some say love for money is the real thing. But you have all the money, what are you going to do it with? You have to share it with somebody. Like that. So therefore, even that, they may have great love for money, but it's because then they're going to share it with somebody. And they want to share it on that level, and with somebody who can work on that level. So then it's... So relationships, actually, when you get down to it, that's the real substance that people are looking for. So here we're looking for illusory relationships. But we can relate to them because they're reflected relationships to the spiritual world. So they're natural relationships for the soul. But in the spiritual world, they're direct. You know. But in the material world, they're not. Mother Yashoda, what you see, that is the personification and the manifestation of the form of parental affection. But in this world, you have a mother, and she has the form like Mother Yashoda. She does the activities like Mother Yashoda. But it's actually been empowered to do that. Because otherwise, from one to the next, you know, one lifetime to the next, it changes. But the potency is the same. The potency, they've been empowered with that. So it's different. So you appreciate someone's motherly ability. But they've been empowered with that. It's not actually them. The soul doesn't actually do that. So they've been empowered with it. So therefore there's a difference. So here we think, oh, she's a nice mother. But actually she's not. She's just been empowered with that potency due to previous karma. And so therefore she manifests as a nice mother. You know? But it's not. So therefore there's a duality there. Therefore here it's illusory. Well, there it's not. It's real. So it's a very subtle science. So if that's understood, then one can deal, at least intellectually, one can deal with all the, you know, problems of the world and all that. So you understand. One's attractions, one's attachments. They're not actually, we're attracting attached to things that aren't really real. The potency is real, but the potency is Krishna. That motherly potency is Krishna. Therefore, in the song, Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Panadan, you know, there's another song also where he says, you know, he's all these different things. Because it's Krishna, he's empowered. So that mood that I got from that person that I called mother, that mood is actually coming from Krishna, though it's been empowered in that one person, so I can relate, because I see the body, I'm not seeing Krishna. So because that potency came through that body, I relate that this body is my mother. But actually, the potency has come from there, because otherwise, at one point, the mother leaves. And that body is there, but it doesn't interact, so you know that that's not actually the mother. That's the body of the mother. Mother was something else. And soul then may go to another body and it'll be father. So it wasn't the soul either. The soul identified with it, therefore you call that soul was the mother. But actually it was the potency of Krishna that was empowered in that body that soul was in, that gave us that motherly experience. You know? So these are the technical points that the later chapters of Gita are explaining. You know, is that how technically the whole process of karma and jnana and all that work, so that one can use it for liberation. Because these are discussions for freeing yourself from, this is tattva. Then therefore you can free yourself or detach yourself from the material nature and work with knowledge. But when it comes to rasa, you're still going to deal with that person as your mother. The relationship and the duties of son towards mother are done towards that person, because that's the person manifesting that potency of mother for you. Though you're not a son and she's not a mother. But because those are the potencies you're both imbued with, therefore that's the duties that you're supposed to perform. You know, it's like a drama. You know, you've been given this part, and these are your lines, and these are who you interact with. You do it right, everybody knows it's an illusion. You go to a theater or see a movie, everybody knows, but you put that in the back of your mind because it's exchange. It's important. So when you see it's well done, well acted, means the exchange was done in a convincing way, then everybody was happy and enjoyed. Though it's an illusion. So the same way here. It's by tattva we understand this. But by duties and by that we behave in those ways and we perform those duties. So then our experience is pleasant. It's nice. And others' experience is also pleasant. So then the science is how to perform those duties connected to Krishna at the same and liberate yourself from the material world, because you have to do both those. Free yourself from the material world and attach yourself to Krishna. At the same time you're here and we're people, so we have to interact. So the stage or the forum of that is, you know, what's going on in the social interactions between ourselves and all the other living entities. Does that make any sense? Yeah. See, the thing is that's why one has to understand both tattva and rasa. Because otherwise you just take the tattva, then you detach yourself from it. If you only understand rasa, you completely absorb yourself in it. Therefore you have to have both at once. Therefore with knowledge you deal. Right? It means if you just look at it, okay, you take a look at a small child, just from tattva. Alright? Absolutely useless. Can't do anything if it wanted to. Can't sit up, can't crawl, can't do nothing. Can't eat, can't take care of itself. And useless. So if we look at it from economic point of view, you know, useless. We look at it from sense gratification, they don't know. They stick anything in the mouth. They don't know what's going on in sense gratification. Liberation, knowledge, nothing. Unintelligent, you know, uninformed, selfish, self-centered, you know, the list goes on. Right? That's the knowledge. But because they're dependent, therefore then all care is taken and everything is done for them. So that's the rasa. So if someone only knows the rasa, they're completely absorbed and they think, you know, it's completely their everything. And if it's only tattva, they won't deal with it at all. Like that. So when you but both of them are a problem. So when you combine them, then you get the result. Because with knowledge, you know that they're ignorant and this and that. So if you don't think they're ignorant, it's just like nowadays, they don't know this. Therefore, they don't try to train them. If somebody's ignorant, then if you're kind to them, you try to train them. Right? If they're so dependent that they can't do anything, you try to create so they can be independent. If they're self-centered, you try to make them understand how they're part of the social thing. So by knowing their defects, you can help them. That's why the Bhagavatam gives. What are the defects of man? What are the defects of woman? What's the defects when you put the two together? What's the defects of children? Wealth, power, position, anything. What is its strengths? Then you know how to use it for Krishna. It's a thing. The Vedic culture is so different from our modern concept that we many times shy away from it. You know, if you know too much, oh, then you ruin the illusion. But if you know, then you can actually deal with it, because you don't want to be an illusion. Right? Man should not be an illusion about women. Women shouldn't be an illusion about men. But because of the conditioned need, you must deal. So therefore, know who you're dealing with. Know what their strengths and weaknesses are. Then you can actually help where you can help and tolerate where you can't. You know? Then that makes science. That's why it says first-class brahmachari makes first-class grihastha, because he's in knowledge. He goes into marriage in knowledge, not in illusion. Like that. So, and you know, one may say, well, then it won't be fun. But dramas are fun. Everybody knows. Even if you've seen the drama so many times, you still like to see it. You know? Because it's experience of exchange, of rasa, that's important. That's what's important. So if you know men are weak here, then you'll support that rather than exploit it. Or women are weak in this point, you'll support that rather than exploit it. And they're strong here, so therefore you'll take advantage and gain from that. So then you can have relationship. That's religion. So if things, relationships don't work, it's because it's irreligious. Because religion means what is its nature, how it needs to be dealt with, what it is and how it needs to be dealt with. That's religion. Anything. How you deal with a pair of cartels. You know? If I take them and go like this, it's irreligious. That's why it doesn't work. Right? You know, it won't send you to hell, but it's irreligious. Because the religion is this makes the sound, and this doesn't. Right? Or, even better, I hold this, and then I put the cloth together. No, it means I'm not a thoughtful person. I'm an irreligious person. Because I don't know the religion of kartal. Kartal makes sound. It's for making sound. And then I must know all the details of that. I don't know, I pick it up and I play it this way. No, it makes some sound. Hey, it's getting sound. Why you're saying? No, you have to take it and hear. Then you get the actual sound. That's more pleasing than that. Of course, we can develop a light for that sound. You know, like that, you know. But it doesn't mean that it's actually serious. Because the point is which of these two sounds, or this, is pleasing to God? So that's the purpose. So that, therefore, we take what is the religion of the thing, and then that's religion, that's dharma. Then how does that connect to Krishna? That's the dharma. So we just take those aspects of the religion that connect to Krishna, and those that don't, we don't deal with. Like that. So that's the science. Religion is actually a science. It's just a basic fundamental science. And everything has religion, so you have to know how to deal with everything. Therefore, the Shastras get into so much detail and give so many rules. It's simply to teach us the principles of how to deal with everything in this world. We think it's restricting, but it's actually free, gives us freedom within this world. If you don't know how to do something, let's say you're put into a new environment, you know nothing, you don't know anybody, don't know the place, don't know the activities, do you feel restricted or free? I know nothing. And you just plunk yourself right down in there. You look around, you don't know what to do. You feel restricted. But when you know the place, you know how to do this, how to do that, how to get everything done, who are all the people, who does what, and how to interact, then you're free. So actually the Vedic culture is freedom. And the modern culture is binding. is restricted. But because ignorance then says, makes us think that religion is irreligion and irreligion is religion, therefore that's the problem. Devotees are free. You know, like the common point is, we don't smoke, and the smoker says, you know, I'm free to smoke, you know, you guys can't smoke. But actually it's the other way around. We could smoke, but we've chosen not to. He's the one that can't not smoke. He has to smoke. So therefore, that's the thing, is that we have to actually get used to what is religion, because for so long we've thought irreligion is religion. You know, or we have an idea of actual religion, but we only understand part of it. We just see it as ritualistic or as economic, you know, like that. We just see it from that side. You know? So therefore, our approach to it is wrong, you know. That also, even you do the right thing, if the mood is wrong, it's not pleasing. Man, okay, I do this, I buy her flowers, I call her up on the phone, I say all the right things, I take her out to dinner, and you know, and then I get what I want. But then it's very mercenary. But it's according to nature. But the woman won't be so satisfied because of the mercenary aspect of it. It's artha, it's economic development. You've taken religion but used it for artha, which the Bhagavatam says you shouldn't do. But if he knows, okay, women like things like this, so therefore I will deal in this way because that's my duty. You know? And that's because Krishna wants us to interface properly like this. Therefore. So then it has a completely different flavor. Exact same activities may be done, but the mentality is different. Or some of those aren't so important, so therefore they're left. And other aspects, because you know the personalities are manifold, so you don't have to take all of them. You take just what's important. So then that way it takes a completely different flavor. Then you take it, that's pious. Then you take it to the next level, is to please Krishna by this. If Krishna is pleased if it's done this way, then it's a whole different ball game. Then not only you're liberated from it, you're materially satisfied, you're liberated from it, but you're still also attracted to Krishna. So that is what's being offered by the Bhagavatam. You know, and the technicality of it, scientific technicality, is given in the Gita. You just want to have a nice time, that's Mahabharata. You know, pious. Is that okay? Okay, so we'll end here, I think. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaur Premanandi.